I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Welcome back to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official and only UK Seahawks podcast. This week, we have some NFL Week 1 action to talk over, and I'm sure it will be a pleasant, jovial affair. We'll also preview the Week 2 game and the home opener against the San Francisco 49ers. Let's have a quick run round of the headlines from the NFL. To do that, I'm joined by Ross Bell and your local podcast celebrity, Adam Nathan. How are we, guys?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
I'm tired. Very tired. Adam?
I'm scrolling through Twitter. Why am I a celebrity? Apart from just being great.
Because that is what our friend Will Travers referred to you as.
Oh, that is true.
Referencing your Jimmy Graham comment yesterday when the group really responded very calmly. Yeah.
You can't say checks in the post anymore, can you? It's a bit old-fashioned, so I guess the PayPal's in the wire or something.
Week one, the Seahawks went all the way to Lambeau Field, the Green Bay Packers, to face, as we said last week, possibly the best quarterback in the league. And it did not go well, the Seahawks falling to a pretty haphazard 17-9 defeat in Lambeau Field. Ross, overall opinions, thoughts before we get into the nitty-gritty?
Yeah. Well, it was fairly depressing offensive performance. Defensively, though, we were amazing. I mean, bar that fumble, we held Rodgers to, 9 points at home and his first ever home shutout in the first half. So, defensively, very happy. Offensively, questions to be asked.
Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, I mean, after all the talk about Aaron Rodgers, who actually, if you break it down, probably had a pretty masterful game to get 300 yards against that defense, that defensive performance at least, it's really frustrating to lose the game in spite of one of the best defensive performances that we've seen in Seattle for a long time. We were texting, and I think in the middle of the third quarter, I said to you, this is one of the best defensive games we've played since Super Bowl 48. And to not be able to capitalize on that with an offense that, once again, we've gone into a season thinking this is the year that it all turns around, is really frustrating and hopefully isn't a precursor for the rest of the year.
Yeah, it was. last week, Reese Oyembo was my Seahawks offensive player to watch, and it didn't take long for him to crop onto my screen into a negative fashion with Nick Perry just destroying him twice, if not three times, on the first drive. And it didn't really pick up from there. We'll go across the line because it was just an absolute sham. The only one to come out, Oyembo was the weak point on Sunday, wasn't he, Adam?
I probably would say that the line improved as you went inwards. So I would say both tackles were the worst two, then the guards were the next, silver medal position. And then Justin Britt, who, the best thing you can say about Justin Britt is there's a picture of, basically it looks like the Green Bay defensive line is our offensive line and vice versa, our O-line, their D-line. And the best thing you can say about Justin Britt is that he's actually not in the picture at all. Despite seven other linemen being there from various teams. God knows what he was doing and where he was supposed to be. But that is quite a remarkable picture. It's like that Maradona picture when he's got five Dutch players around him, sort of iconic. But for me, it's a truly iconic Seahawk picture that I for one, will keep close to my heart.
Yeah, it's almost like he was the only one doing his job properly. Obviously, I haven't seen any all 22 of it, but you can just imagine that he was the only one doing his job properly on that. Ross, O-line?
Yeah, I mean, that picture, definitely Britt. There's three Green Bay Packers there and there's three offensive linemen. So Britt's doing his job. He's probably blocking the other offensive defensive linemen of the Packers. But yeah, those three other guys just chasing those three Packers who are chasing Russ. The only time they look serviceable was when they're in completely max protect, and that gives you two options to throw the ball to who are both covered all the time. So it's really, really depressing performance from all of them, basically.
Yeah, it wasn't great. but Adam, you said the Fetty was weak. I haven't rewatched the game, so this might change if I do rewatch. I don't think if Eddie was that bad in grand scheme of things on Sunday.
There's a couple flashed, of great didn't he? Clips. There's some great highlights of him. And terrible play.
There's a few really incredible clips of instead of his first steps is sort of two hops backwards, like he's doing the cha-cha slide. There's I think Nathan Ernst, if you go on his Twitter, he breaks down the tape really well, probably better than anyone else does, in my opinion. He's got a few clips of Ifedi sort of against Clay Matthews, and he's hopping in the air. I mean, how on earth are you supposed to block someone running straight at you if you're in the sky? Like, it's not going to work. I've said my points in Ifedi quite a few times, and so don't need to labour them again. But, I don't think his performance was impressive, at least.
No, yeah, and it's as Adam said, it's another week, another game week where we are talking about the offensive line. It's something which Pete Carroll said they are frustrated with. I think he said that they're still talking about it at this point because he thought a corner had been turned. But yet again, we won't go into the second week of the season against the 49ers, against a D-line which have three first-round top 10 draft picks in Solomon Thomas, Arik Armstead, and DeForest Buckner. So that will be enjoyable, because really all the Packers had was Mike Daniels, wasn't it, Russ?
Yeah, pretty much. It was one guy. Basically, just before they scored their first touchdown, he just took over the game. He just made Jokul and Glowinski. He just took them over. He just blazed past both of them inside with just simple moves, not even technical moves, just complete ball rushes and straight inside and straight in Russ's face before he can even get to the back of his drop. And he's got absolutely no chance. We've said this all the time. I think Russ performed admirably in what he could do, because the receivers recovered and he had no chance to throw the ball ever, apart from before half time when basically he was in shotgun the entire time.
Wilson went 14 for 27, 158 yards, and possibly sacked for more yards than he was thrown for.
I think this is worth labouring, though, because at the start of the year, you know, people often break down, you know, which defensive lines are going to cause the most problems, and you do a list. And the worry for me is that the Packers were nowhere near anyone's list of defensive lines that are going to give us problems. Yeah. If this is what's going to... You hope that things will improve, and you know, there's nothing like a real game to show out weaknesses and make you change things. But if that is the precursor to the rest of the year, we've got big problems.
Yeah, almost definitely. But as we've pointed out, Mike Daniels, you could do that every week, at least one in every team. Obviously, the three next week, you've got Aaron Donald, and you've got Henry Anderson for the Colts. I mean, he could become an all-pro when he plays us in a few weeks. He's going to have to
be. You've got the Giants and the Texans to face as well this year.
Yeah.
In a row, Rams, Giants, Texans. What a month that's going to be.
Yeah, I think I might cancel the internet for the next few weeks. On the offense, Russell Wilson did what he could, a lot of it running through his life. The only other one who's come out with any credit on the offense is the one who always comes out with credit on the offense, Adam, number 89.
Yeah, he made two or three really big catches. But I want to give a shout out to Paul Richardson as well. We were texting during the game, and I said during whenever we go into a hurry-up offense, Richardson is a guy who really looks like he's going to flash. He seems to make his best catches and best plays when we're in a hurry-up system. I don't know if that's just a coincidence or the truth, but... I thought he stood up and did his job very well, and to a much, much lesser, you know, you're really scrambling when you're going to praise a guy who didn't make a catch, but I was quite impressed with the effort that Darbo made to make that catch in the corner, which could have changed the game if he got his feet down.
That is. I mean, I'm not very hot on my science, as my GCSE grade shows, but I don't understand how that's happened. As you said, Adam, yesterday to me, that why is he triple covered? And how did he not get anywhere near getting even a toe down?
I mean, he looked like Prince Ali and Aladdin coming through on an elephant when he was carried. I mean, it was like, you know, he was being crowd surfed from one end of Green Bay to the other. I'm not blaming him in any way. He had no chance. But they did a great job covering. But why were there three guys on him?
Yeah, someone else must have been open, surely.
There was Nathan Ertz posted last night. The clip of the, I think it's from All 22 as well, where it looked like the linebacker was on him, and then you've got the cornerback, and then Kevin King just appears.
Yeah.
Don't even know where he was playing on that, but yeah, it's very, very, very strange. But yeah, yet again, though, with the Seahawks, it was another slow start for the offense. In Russell Wilson's six-year NFL career as Football Perspective tweeted out yesterday, the Seahawks have lost and or scored 12 or fewer points in five of the six week one games. But on the defense, that is something to take into consideration. I mean, it could just be a slow start, if not a very, very alarming one, Adam.
Yeah. It's the same as last year. I guess the only way we're going to know is by seeing more stuff. It always worries me that every defensive line we face seems to overmatch us. And it conversely, every offensive line we play, I mean, Green Bay have a decent offensive line, but they had both their right side from last year not there. You know, a lot of fans thought, and you know, our defensive line played really well, but their offensive line still looked passable. And we don't even need a good, we just need them to be not catfish. Like I said, there's a million times. Just don't be rubbish. I think after Brady, Wilson is probably one of the guys that needs the fewest, you know, the least amount of time to make stuff happen.
Yeah.
He's a genius and a magician when he's got just a half step, but he's not even getting a half step to do anything. And it doesn't help that he also sees ghosts when it starts to get a bit dicey, which is understandable. Yeah. So the whole thing combined just makes it very, very difficult to know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'd wholeheartedly agree. You just need to hope that week two, the next few days, there might be a change on the offensive line. Pete Carroll said yesterday that the competition is still open for Odie Abushi and rookie Ethan Postage. On the defensive side, though, as we have briefly touched upon, it was pretty damn special. The front four of Jarran Reed, Cliff Avril, Michael Bennett, and the new boy, Sheldon Richardson, caused havoc like a defensive line for Seattle hasn't when we're facing the Packers. Seemed to cause Aaron Rodgers more issues than they did when he only had one foot in the championship game, but it was quite something all across the board, wasn't it, Russ?
Yeah, they were getting to him a lot. I mean, 8 quarterback hits, 4 sacks, and they were getting through him, stopping. I mean, Tom Montgomery had 19 carries for 54 yards. That's a very good run stuffing performance. He didn't really get anything happening on the ground. Rodgers was running a lot of the time. He wasn't making throws from the pocket. He was always having to get out of there because it was just collapsing quickly. It's just Rodgers is a supreme quarterback. That's the only problem. Against another team, we would have been fine.
So, some of his throws on Sunday were absolutely scandalous.
One to Bennett between Bobby and...
Yeah, and there was one where he turned away from the rush and without even making a step or getting his feet set, he threw an absolute dart across the field on the sideline to Cobb or Nelson. It's just like, you really, really cannot do anything but just sit there and go, okay, you got us. But but on the opposite side for Seahawks or O-line, that is quite a good, even though it was down the right tackle, it was quite a good Packers O-line, and they caused them a lot of grief, Adam.
Yeah, they were great. The only frustration is, and this happens, I don't know, it seems to happen a lot, that our worst down always seems to be third down, which is really frustrating, because we had, I think they were 9 for 16 on third down, don't hold me to that, but they were pretty strong on third down, and a lot of them were from more than 9 yards, which is really frustrating, because everyone was doing so well on their jobs, but it just, you know, the odd blown coverage. I mean, Chris Richard was going nuts on the sideline a couple of times. I think it was a third and 16 that they ended up with a complete blown coverage, which was a game changing play. But you know, that it's nitpicking to complain about third down when the defense basically gives up 10 points to the best quarterback they'll face before the championship game if they get there by a distance.
Aaron Rodgers on the day did get over 300 yards, but as Danny Kelly from The Ringer pointed out, that they only had one play in the red zone on Sunday, the Packers. That was a 6-yard touchdown run. the play after Russell Wilson lost the fumble at the 6. So that is, for an offense which is so potent and so and was on the field for so long, it was an absolute 40-20 split on time of possession. That is really quite impressive. Moving back from the defensive line, though, a lot of pressure was put on rookie cornerback Shaquille Griffin, and he only, the longest play he gave up was 13 yards. He looked the part, didn't he, Adam?
Yeah, I thought he was great. He does have his slight issues about giving stuff up underneath, but there's that, I presume, is schematic in the sense that he's told not to give up the big play over the top. And actually, he looked a lot better than when I first saw him do this against, who would it have been, the Vikings in preseason. The pass breakups were great. He could have had a pick. If he turned around so well, he almost could have picked the ball off in the... I think the third or fourth quarter. And I have to say, I thought he looked a lot better than Jeremy Lane did at right cornerback, who I'm sure we'll discuss later on. But I don't think we missed him at all. And as a unit, I thought we looked a lot more comfortable with Shaq at right cornerback than we did with Lane.
Yeah, I'd agree. But also, I think it would have helped to have that extra body back there, because obviously when on the field for as long as they were, a bit of a rotation all over would have been nice. But yeah, Shaq Griffin, we haven't had a rookie look like him, have we? It's only one game in, but it's as I said a couple of weeks ago about him. Once it clicks, he's going to be hard pressed to be beaten on the deep ball. As Nathan Ernst also pointed out last night, Rogers tested it two or three times and he just blanketed Davante Adams and I think it's Jordy Nelson on the other one, and he nearly did the famous tip drill to Earl Thomas running in from, I don't know, possibly Milwaukee is where he started his run from. He got there so quick. Ross?
Yeah, Shaq was fantastic. He's already, for me, cemented that place as right corner. Opposite Sherman, he looked great. And it's entertaining to see the TV cameras not be able to pick which one of them to switch as well. Focusing on Shaq, sending Sherman.
multiple times.
10 solo tackles he made in that game.
Yeah, 10 solo tackles. I think he had two or three pass breakups.
Yeah.
And brilliant. Yeah, it was... Yeah, the only thing that may delay his ascension to locked-in starter is the fact he's a rookie. In a way that they might not want to put too much on his plate too soon. Adam, is that something you can see them using as reasoning?
I think it depends on how quickly Deshaun Shedd gets back as well, if he gets back at all, because that he'll it would be harsh on him if he was fully healthy to not be given another shot to take back the spot that he did so admirably in last year. But look, for the first time in a little while, we've got options in that position. And, you know, to have feasibly three very good cornerbacks that can play on the outside is... I'm not going to complain about that at all, especially with Sherman and the whole of the Legion of Boom entering, you know, getting into their 30s and pushing, getting a little bit older.
Can we talk about Earl? Earl's back.
Earl Thomas is most certainly back. Flying around, he had really two or three really impressive open field immediate stop tackles as well on some of the, when the Packers started to go to a quicker passing game, when the pass rush was starting to overwhelm slightly.
He looks enormous as well.
Yeah, but really quicker somehow.
Yeah, he really, really did. Also, Adam just touched on it. Jeremy Lane obviously was ejected in the first quarter as the Packers went on their first drive pretty much with ease until a Seahawks rookie stepped in into one of the paths of his throws on what Pete Carroll said was his first play.
First and 10 at the Seattle 32. Montgomery stays in the backfield. He hasn't touched the ball yet. Rogers out of the shotgun. Going to throw again. Looks. Dumped it. It's intercepted. Threw it right to the Seahawks. Coming near sidelines. Down the side is Nas Jones. He's going to go all the way. 10, 5. Are you kidding me? Touchdown Seahawks. Flags are down.
Yep, so rookie... third or fourth? Was he third round pick, Nas Jones?
Yeah, third
round pick out of North Carolina, Nazir Jones, picking off Aaron Rodgers with the first snap in the NFL. That's quite a start, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what was more impressive, the pick or the fact that he outran Rodgers over the course of about 80 yards. You know, my dad tells a story. My dad was quite a large kid, and he... used to play rugby for the school, and he tells a story that the one time he was about to score a try, he ended up tripping over his own legs because he was getting to the try line. And just watching Jones, I was just expecting something calamitous to happen. But he, I mean, he looks structurally unsound when he's running at that speed. Yeah. But let's be honest, he's just an enormous human. But he ended up getting there. But you saw Cliff Averill push, and I know it was ticky-tack, but I think we all winced a little bit when we saw the hand go into Rogers' side / back. And whilst I don't agree with the call, I can see why it was given with a block in the back. And it's just such a shame to be pushed all the way back to the 50 when, you know, you should be 7-0 up.
Yeah, and obviously the big thing as well is just completely handcuffing the offense, which could do nada at that point in the game. Jeremy Lane was ejected for what was nothing more than a tussle with Davante Adams, which Davante Adams, let's be honest, started, Russ.
Yeah, Jeremy Lane was kicked out of the game for being pulled to the ground by his face mask, it seemed. I'm not really sure what the ref saw in that. It was completely ridiculous, and literally everyone that covers NFL has agreed that it was a really BS call.
Yeah, and a pretty big one to lose a starting cornerback against someone like Aaron Rodgers. But what was your take on the incident, Adam?
Well, my take immediately was probably rather hasty and over the top on social media, which we shan't repeat now, although I don't necessarily think that Jeremy Lane is the sharpest knife in the drawer. But I thought it was unlucky. But the problem is that it would, you know, he started off having the problem with Randall Cobb, I think, on like the first or second play of the game. Mm. And I guess it just got into the referees' heads. You know, it's always been chippy with Lane, and it was a bit like the referees came into that game with Lane's card marked. And whilst that's not acceptable to give a decision against him because of that, I wonder if that had an impact on the outcome of that play.
Yeah, and also Pete Carroll says the game that the call to eject a player was on one referee's, what he apparently saw, which is just, with all the technology, all the thing, all the help the referees get, it's just absolutely, it's just absolutely ridiculous that it was just on one referee's apparently slanted sight, Russ.
Well, yeah, Buck and Aiken immediately said, well, that's not an ejection, that's not really ejection worthy. And I mean, they looked at it literally while they were checking the pushing the back, of course. Yeah. I mean, it takes that long.
Yeah, and the pushing the back was completely unnecessary because Nurse Jones was not being caught at the 4 if he wasn't being caught at the 44.
No.
But apart from that, it was a big call. It did possibly have an impact, but the people calling, saying that the refs were the reason we lost that game, it's easy and it's cheap and it's inaccurate for this game, because as we've already talked about, the offense was the main handcuff for this, not the guys in stripes. Although there were a few,
the Jimmy Graham end zone,
obviously Jimmy Graham pass interference as well, where they say it was uncatchable, it landed 3 yards into the white, 3 inches into the white, sorry. But never mind. Anything else that come out of the game for you, Adam?
I thought special teams were very good. There were quite a few good open field tackles on punt returns. John Ryan looked back to his best.
Yeah, brilliant.
He had one, you know, iffy punt, but when you are punting 75 times in a game, you know, one of them
60
not
yards
the best.
Was his longest.
Yeah, I thought he played well. Tyler Lockett showed some good burst on his first kick return back this year. That was exciting. I think on the referees thing, as a more general point, I think it's probably time that any play should be challengeable, and if you want to waste a challenge on it, that something is subjective,
yeah,
I think you should be allowed to, because ultimately a spot or something like that, you know, could be important. But what's more important than potentially losing two touchdowns to decisions that you can't review? I think it's probably time that rule is looked at, and that you should be allowed to challenge whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, I watched quite a bit of college ball on Saturday. There's a few players ejected. They took ages to make those calls on ejections in those games, and they were more blatant than what Jeremy Lane did. So the fact that they didn't take more time, even to take a commercial break or something, just to take a look at it, is just bizarre. With Jimmy Graham, I agree. I think those plays, they are challengeable calls in the CFL if on defensive pass interference is a challengeable play. So if it isn't called, the coach can then tell the rest, look, I think that's PI, can you look at it? And most of the time it's overturned. So
you wouldn't even mind it being like cricket, in the sense that the umpire, the referee's initial decision has favour, and it takes a big thing to overturn it. But you would assume that if they got to rewatch that Jimmy Graham one, they would see that it was catchable, and you know, I think it would be, you know, back to the cricket reference, umpire's call wouldn't have stood on that one. I don't think.
No. Say, I agree. Mostly, a lot of talk has come out of that, a lot of it focusing on Jimmy Graham, who had a couple of drops on Sunday, one which was just very and Jimmy Graham like on the sideline, where he just didn't get his hands in the right place or something. But obviously, a lot of talk has been focusing on the fact the trade that sent Max Unger to the New Orleans Saints, and it's it's something that's going to keep cropping up because it's just, as like with the referees, it's an easy tag. Adam?
The Jimmy Graham thing is without question the most boring thing that Celtics fans discuss.
It's going to be weekly as well.
The trade is just completely irrelevant because we also got Tyler Lockett out of it, and delighted that we got that. So let's nip that one in the bud. But every Seahawk player seems to be, you know, you comment and he had a bad game. Fine, you move on to the next one. Yeah. Jimmy Graham, he has a bad game, and we have to talk about his future as a Seahawk. And I don't understand why he's different to anyone else. I mean, I get that there's high expectations because he's a great player, but I don't know. There just seems to be a relish from some in him not succeeding because what his trade represented was a move away from typical Seahawk football. But we wouldn't be able to. We tried typical Seahawk football this week with Eddie Lacy, and it was a complete and utter disaster.
Lynch wouldn't break through that line.
You know,
no, he would. He would. Eddie Lacy is terrible. But anyway, sorry, Adam. Carry on.
I've got to come back to Lacy because we do have to talk about him. So I don't understand why with Jimmy Graham it can't just be he had a crap game and he'll bounce back next week. It seems to be, you know, and we had a big thread on the UK Seahawk forum this week, and that's not to have a go at the guy that started it. He's a good guy, and you know, everyone's entitled to their views, but it seems like a little bit of double standards in the sense that it's Jimmy has his rhetoric and the rest have their own.
Yeah. Like I've said numerous times on that point that Russell Wilson was poor last year. I know he had his injuries, but the Saints game is the one that keeps cropping up. We should have won that game, and his play was one of the main reasons we really didn't. But no one seems to talk about it. When Russell Wilson has a bad day, there's circumstances like the O-line or the running game or this or that.
Yeah, you can't mention Russ playing badly.
He only had one sock on that day or something. But when Jimmy Graham has... Yeah, and as Pete Carroll noted yesterday in his press conference on Monday night, Jimmy had a bad day.
It happens,
and it's the first game of the season, and Jimmy Graham is a tight end. I can't remember which time. I think it was Delaney Walker last week said Jimmy Graham changed the game at tight end. He changed it. He made teams realize the value in having someone who can do the things that he can do. If a fellow player is saying that, then he's possibly not going to have too many days like he did on Sunday again.
Sorry to interrupt. Let's be quite clear. The offensive line isn't bad because of lack of investment in terms of money and price. Giving them another player worth $8 million. Well, I'd rather have Jimmy Graham than another Luke Jokel playing right guard, to be quite honest with you. So, you know, if it was going to be a surefire thing that you might be able to get Joe Thomas for Jimmy Graham, then you might consider it. But I don't really want another huge lump of money and or picks given to these talent evaluators on the offensive line, because thus far I don't think they've suggested that they know what they're doing with it.
No, and also at the same point, if you have Jimmy Graham on the field, as we started to see with Doug Baldwin, he's a good thing to have when the O-line doesn't stand up, because you can just stop and turn around and catch the ball. And so you can just save your quarterback from getting murdered. But Max Unger is starting to be treated in ways that Steve Largent and Cortez Kennedy. And let's be honest, he wasn't. Over his 6 years in Seattle, he only played a full season twice in six seasons. He only played one game in 2010. And in 2013, where Unger missed three games and then all the playoffs into Super Bowl, the sack rate for Russell Wilson was 9%. Last year, it was 7%. So the way that they're talking about Max Unger doesn't match the Max Unger that we saw most of the time in Seattle. Like Max Unger was a good center, but he wasn't Travis Frederick, let's be honest.
Well, yeah, it's not like Russ wasn't getting sacked or Jackson wasn't getting sacked. They still were.
Yeah.
There's nothing like absence to make supporters overrate a player.
I think I said
this on our lost tapes, Stu, when we were talking over the summer about how the way in which you say a player's name can dictate about how good they are. You know, we're just talking like Ibushi and, oh, you know, we've got Luke Jokel and Ibushi just because you don't know who they are. But when they actually play, I mean, Arsenal fans being the mugs they are the worst for this. With someone like, oh, you know, you know, we'll get Wilshere back and everything will be great. Or, you know, we're just missing Coquelin in midfield and then everything will be great. And Max Unger is now becoming the Coquelin of the Seattle Seahawks.
Just wait till they start mentioning cursing those references.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it'll be like. At some point it'll be, oh, you know, Jermaine Curse would make that kind of block or catch. There's nothing like absence to make people revere someone. And the Unger thing is just point, you know, 101 for this.
On bringing it back to football, there was a thing last week where it looked like this Cov City was selling Jody Jones, who's easily our best player, to Oxford, and a lot of people go, oh, yeah, we'll sell him and bring in Carl Baker. Carl Baker's 34, Jody Jones is 19. I mean, that's not a way to run a team. But apparently for some fans it is, because Carl Baker wouldn't score a hat-trick at Hartlepool. But never mind. We did touch on him briefly. Eddie Lacy, Russ.
5 carries, 3 yards. A longest of 6. I'm not sure what happened.
Was it about 8:30 on Sunday night? I video called Adam. And what was your predicted stat line, Adam?
So I thought I was being incredibly negative about Eddie Lacy in giving him 10 carries for 27 yards. I'm dreaming of 10 for 27 today.
Yeah.
He looked like he was running in treacle. He could not get his feet going at all.
Yeah, I mean, he spent the week before talking about saying that he was thinking about jumping into doing a Lambeau leap. He scored a touchdown. To do that, he needs to turn Madden on, I think, because it wasn't happening on Sunday. He did not look good. I mean, the run game, as you mentioned about the O-line, did not have much of a chance, but Chris Carson did a lot more, looked a lot more impressive with his opportunities behind that sham of a line on Sunday than Eddie Lacy did. And Adam, he's not going to be on the team by the time he gets to New York, is he?
I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, I've just started watching Series 3 of Narcos, and this isn't a spoiler. If it is a spoiler for you, then you need to do some reading. I've got more faith in Pablo Escobar coming back into Series 3 and retaking Colombia than Eddie Lacy turning into a great running back again for the Seahawks. I mean, he is just... When McCarthy made his comments about, you know, every player that gets to the NFL is good, I think I do agree with the general view, but oh my God, Eddie Lacy, especially when you got, is it Mike Davis on the practice squad?
Yeah.
You don't want to lose him. And oh goodness, I can't watch too much more of that.
No, Mike Davis tweeted that he wishes he was playing on Sunday. He's getting a bit antsy.
We all do.
Most certainly, and obviously there is starting to become running back injuries around the league, and teams are plucking off running backs from other practice squads, so it soon will come round to Davis. We need to avoid another Rod Smith from a few years ago, who's now the third running back for the Cowboys. But yeah, it wasn't a great few hours spent on Sunday night in watching that on Sky Sports. But well, an offense is pretty easy. It's probably possibly going to be Doug, isn't it?
Yeah, because, I mean...
through default, more than anything.
Yeah, Russ was rushing. He had some nice runs. 40 yards on 2 carries.
Yeah, he led the team in rushing off just 2 carries. We heard all last season, because when Russell Wilson gets back running, that will open it up. That will help the O-line. Nah, that
didn't. Well, there's no play-action read game anymore. That, if you can take away the run completely, then Russ can't do what he does best, and that's fake the handoff and burn outside.
Someone posted a few clips. It might be Aaron Nagler, who covers the Packers, where every time they did a repass option thing, Clay Matthews was just standing waiting
ready for it. And
so they did play that quite well. Last year we played there, I think it was Julius Peppers was in that role.
Yeah.
So Don Capers most certainly has Russell Wilson's number. Doug on offense, the only one of really, Adam?
Give a shout to Chris Carson for a couple of explosive runs.
Yeah, I mean, he turned a -6 into, was it 4?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Running all over the field.
Traveling 765 yards.
Yes. Yeah. As I said when I watched it, he's clearly got his Fitbit on. his steps. But yeah, on defense, it's a harder call. But I think for me, it's going to have to go to the rookie, just of the workload he got compared to the one he's supposed to be expecting. And he didn't. He as I said earlier, looked the part. I think Shaq Griffin's the one for me. And defence, Russ?
KJ Wright for me, mainly for just his completely fair and legal hit on Aaron Rodgers as he was going down, and to get that sort of reaction from Martellus Bennett as well.
Martellus Bennett did not get ejected.
No, that, ridiculous.
But no, it's not ridiculous, but after what you do with Jeremy Lin.
Well, yeah, exactly, compared to two.
Yeah, KJ Wright did yet again give up a few passes to Martellus during the game, as he always seems to do against tight ends. But yeah, he had it.
Stuffs the run time and time again.
Yeah, that the run defense was good. Adam, defense one?
Maybe not the best player, but Sheldon Richardson was fun to watch, wasn't he?
Yes.
He really is an explosive player that's going to add something completely different to this team. I'm really looking forward to seeing him play a lot more because he's going to be great. Weird how many of them went down seemingly with cramping.
Yeah.
Richardson got taken out twice by Frank Clark when they were both trying to crash
Bennett,
the pocket.
Bennett went down with cramping and...
Everyone went off for a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, I think, but there was one thing which I think Pete Carroll, in his assessment of Richardson, seems to be a lot of times where there was two players in the same position.
Yeah.
Facing the quarterback, there's a lot of traffic which you can't imagine is one, sustainable, and two, planned. So you'd imagine with an extra week under his belt, that might clear up a bit. Mm. But there were a few occasions where Rodgers was escaping a sack and it just two or three Seahawks players
on top of each other.
All having like a sleepover in the middle of Lambeau Field. But yeah, it was strange. But yeah, Sheldon Richardson is going to be, as I said earlier, that O-line for the Packers is not too bad. It's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And he caused some mischief back there. And also, Sheldon Richardson, he has changed his Instagram handle. Last week when he signed, it was God for short, which is pretty damn ballsy. He's now changed it to the Hawk Nest Monster.
Nice.
So I'm sure that will go down very well. But yeah, moving on and on to week two.
Second down, four-man blitz, throwing near side, and he's got it. It's Doug Baldwin and a first down and a big gain. We're going to see our first carry to Michael sprinting through the hole. Christian Michael! Touchdown!
Good push right here, and Christian Michael, who... One thing he does, he runs with tremendous burst, untouched, all the way to the end zone. And so much for the running woes and sleepless in Seattle.
Here's a blitz. Wilson on that ankle runs away, throws, diving. Did he make the catch? Oh, my goodness.
That penalty's declined. Result of the play is first down.
Michael's got it. In for the touchdown. And Jermaine Effetti, their draft pick, hurt over the middle. And there is Graham. The ball's on the ground. I didn't see a signal.
Ruling on the field is reversed. The ball starts coming loose before the receiver's arm is down on the ground.
And that kick is up and good. And that makes it 14-3. Three-man rush this time. Wilson's got time. He's going to let it fly. And he's got a man. And he's got a completion. It is Baldwin. First down. Wilson, pressure, feels it. Trots away, throwing. End zone. Caught. Touchdown, Graham.
With Russell Wilson, you got to keep working because he keeps plays going for a while. That's exactly what Graham does. The connection, the chemistry, it's starting to happen between these guys. And it's going to be lethal when those two start fully trusting each other. Boy, is he showing it with the way he's playing.
Another flag. This one, I think, is on San Francisco. So Wilson looking to take advantage. Deep jump ball. And Graham came down with it.
Week two, we move on to face the San Francisco 49ers in the Seahawks home opener. The 49ers on Sunday hung around for a little while against what apparently we've seen the rusty Carolina Panthers offense before getting basically blown out in more than half empty, two-thirds empty Levi Stadium in San Francisco. After what happened on Sunday, this could be the perfect tonic, couldn't it, Russ?
Yeah, it tends to be. We had this last season, and I'm sure it'll happen again next year. We'll be poor in week one, and San Francisco will turn up in Seattle, and there's nothing really there to be worried about, I think. The defense is good, but offense is... talent poor. I think Garson is going to be shut down, and then I mean Carlos Hyde is going to find very little room to run, and the rest of them, Marquise Goodwin, I think Shaq can cover him quite easily, and their tight end is apparently George Kittle, who I don't even know who that is.
Yeah, he's a rookie, fourth round pick, I think he was. He's apparently looked quite good. He's the reason they traded Vance McDonald to the Steelers. But yeah, it's not a bad welcome home after Sunday, is it, Adam?
It's not too bad. If it is going to mimic the game last year, then maybe Eddie Lacy will channel his inner Kristen Michael and have a career day. Who knows? Yeah, it's probably the team that you'd most want to play at this stage of the season if we need a comeback, especially with Reuben Foster unavailable, which is a shame, but thankfully it's only a high ankle sprain for him because I'm really looking forward to watching him play this year. But it is another decent defensive front to come against, so it'll be good to see how the team adjusts around that.
Yeah, I'd agree. On offense, it's just the obvious one is the airline just needs to improve, but they are, as I said, they are facing three former first-round picks for the 49ers. But elsewhere, anything you want to see on the offensive side, Adam?
Just some sort of consistency and rhythm. One thing we didn't discuss was Russell Wilson going a bit rogue in his post-match press conference and saying that he actually would like to see us play a little bit more up-tempo. And I think I'm for that. You know, if ground and pound is going to be ending a three and out in 2 minutes, you might as well try and score in 2 minutes instead. And, you know, if the defense is going to be on the field for the majority of the way, you might as well at least try and get something going offensively with it. So it'll be interesting to see what sort of tempo they come out in from early on, because we certainly look at our most fluid in the hurry-up offense.
Yeah, most definitely. It's, as I think there's a lot of cooks, chefs behind the scenes of the offense, and it seems to be hampering the offense more than anything. McCable, Bevel, and Carroll all seem to want to do and operate in different ways. But yeah, anything else on offense, Russ?
I want to see a running game. I want to actually see them run the ball successfully for more than two or three runs a game. Hopefully Thomas Rawls is fit. Apparently he's going to be into this game, but they lied to us all last week saying he was fully practicing, so we'll see come Sunday if he's actually available.
Yeah, I think it was Schefter on Sunday said that Rawls was like a different running back who was at 100%, but they just wanted to, he's at like 98%, but they wanted to give him an extra week to be at 100% before.
Fair enough.
In week one, you don't really mind holding them out. You would expect more of a run game than we got on Sunday, but yeah. I think the run game is where I'd like to see improvement. Obviously, it would be interesting to see the names and the bodies running the ball and what order as well. Obviously, Rawls is going to be back. Carson could see a heavy workload, and just see how they use CJ Prosise, who seems to just be a third down back on Sunday and lined up a few times in the slot, and I think one time out wide as well. So it'd be interesting how they continue to use him. But yeah, run game on the defensive side, it's just more of the same, isn't it, Adam?
Yeah, stop the run. Carlos Hyde's the main threat, so it's important to stop him. And if we do that, I think that will set a good foundation for the rest of the defense to take over the game. And I have a sneaky suspicion we'll get a defensive touchdown on Sunday.
Yeah, I agree with every point of that. Russ?
Yeah, Brian Hoyer is the San Francisco quarterback this year. And I mean, that Carolina front is good, but it's not as good as ours. And they held him to 193 yards and they sacked him four times. I'd hopefully look to double those sack numbers at least.
Yeah, I couldn't even name you a pass rusher for the Panthers this year. they got rid of Ely.
Yeah, they got two guys in the middle and Latulele and Short, and that's it. Really.
That's pretty impressive then. But yeah, confidence is at a much higher level for this week, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, definitely. We should blow these guys out. Home opener, team that's fairly talent poor, and with a history of beating them quite handily in recent years. So, yeah, very high.
Yeah, Adam, does the confidence top the 7 million confidence scale you put out on Sunday?
Yeah, God, I should pull back the curtain a little bit. I had a bit of a change of heart on Sunday in thinking that, I don't know, I just all of a sudden thought we were going to win. And my confidence level, I think, in the percentage, I think I sent a nine-figure number to Stu. So obviously that came back and bit me in the backside. But I think this is going to be a comprehensive win that I think we may not learn too much from, because we're not going up against much. But it's the Titans the week after, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be the biggest test out of the next two games by far, although they didn't have a greatest win result on Sunday. But I am pretty confident.
Well, Christian Michael Gashley's got us last year in our first game.
Yeah. But, we can do that. Yeah. I do think that this, it needs to be a warning with this game not to read, as Adam said, not to read too much into it. As people read a lot into Sunday, they shouldn't read much into this Sunday if it is a bounce back to what we're expecting. So, Ross, score prediction?
35-7.
Adam?
33-10, which includes one missed point after from the goal.
Blair looks good.
As I said about Blair Walsh quickly, to Sean, I think it's the what happens to him after he misses. If he bounces back immediately, then we'll be all right. I think 34-9.
It needs to be in the 30s, definitely.
Yeah, you'd expect so. And I mean, that might be the only thing which could be a detraction is if we don't get to 30 against this defense without Ruben Foster, without anyone of note outside the cornerback. You'd expect Doug Richardson, Lockett. It could be a healthy dose of Darbo as well. He's clearly got the trust if they're thrown to him in the fourth quarter in Green Bay. So, but yeah, moving on, we're going to try again with some locks and shocks. Ross, your lock of the week.
Can I have the Seahawks as my lock?
If you want.
Well, definitely the lock then. It's not, we're going to thrash this Niners team. Or the Cardinals. The Cardinals or the Colts. Yeah, Seahawks.
My lock of the week is the Raiders at the Jets. Derek Carr, Marshawn Lynch, although he didn't have a massive day on the stat sheet, really did look the part, running the ball in his very Marshawn-y way.
It's Jets at Raiders even more so. So
Sorry, I'm reading that the wrong way around. Yeah.
I will go for my lock of the week. I'm going to go for the Buccaneers at home to Chicago, who, although they look good, I think Tampa are on for probably a double-digit win season. So I'll go for Tampa.
Shock of the week, Adam?
Shock of the week. This is a tricky one because some of the games I can't even work out who's the favorite.
That's what I'm thinking for mine.
Shock of the week. Let's go for... God, there's not really a lot, is there? Just to throw something out because I have to, I'll go Green Bay to get revenge on Atlanta from the championship game last year and win.
That's what I was going to go for. So, Russ?
Would the Jags beating the Texans be a shock?
Titans.
The Titans, yeah, because that Jags defense looks for real.
Yeah,
that would be a shock.
Yeah, I'm going to go for that because Clayus Campbell had a great time on Sunday.
Yeah, I think mine is going to be the... there's not a lot.
Mine's about the Eagles beating the Chiefs, because I like that as well.
I'm going to go the opposite way to Adam. I think the Bears might beat the Buccaneers.
Ooh. Season opener letdown for the Bucs, home.
Yeah, and also all the nonsense they put with whatever the happened last week.
Bears looks all right against the Falcons.
Yeah, Mike Glennon is very, very limited, but they seem to be trying to enhance those limitations. But I think the Bears to beat the Buccaneers in Tampa. I think it'll be a similar story to what the Falcons game was, where the running game will keep them in it with Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen. Anything else catch your eye around the NFL in week one? Adam?
Well, it actually went against my shock of the week, and I was very surprised. Not very surprised. Very impressed that the Raiders went into Tennessee and did such a good job on them. Nearly as good a job as the co-commentator in that game, Tony Romo. If you've not seen the video, you've got to find it. It's a 2.5-minute clip
Mystic
of Romo basically predicting every single play every play in the video, predicting every play that the Raiders run. And it is amazing to watch. I mean, the knowledge there is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it wasn't a high bar to be better than Phil Simms. Through week one, he's definitely shown he will be. He will be someone who makes that CBS broadcast worth watching. There's also a pretty cool clip where he talks through why incompletions are not always a bad thing, where Mariota throws it, basically throws it away as he's getting, as Jack Conklin, he seemed to really struggle on Sunday, which is a shame for,
good for us, though.
Not the prodigal son.
No, he got worked by Eddie Vanderdoes, from the rookie from UCLA with the greatest name. But yeah, he got worked on that one, and Mariota throws it away, but he throws it away in a way where it's not a dangerous throwaway, and Remo explains why incompletions are not bad. So that's also on Twitter if you want to go find. Remo was VVE, very impressive. But elsewhere in the NFL, Ross?
Well, the Texans have done what they've previously done and benched their starting quarterback after during the first game.
Yeah, but that was just a stupid. I thought Watson was starting, and then Redstone went to the game first. I thought, why is Tom Savage playing?
Yeah, Savage looked awful. Well, the times he was on his feet, most of the time he was laying underneath Calais Campbell and a couple of other Dante Fowler and various other Jags defenders.
Yeah.
Watson looked good apart from a pick late on.
Yeah, if ever a holdout had a negative impact on the team, Dwayne Brown's in Houston most certainly did. Calais Campbell breaking Jaguars franchise record in one half.
3.5 sacks.
Yeah, which is pretty impressive and worth, what, 70 or 80 million, whatever he got for them in the summer. Also, for around the league for me is the Broncos actually hung around. That defense is going to carry them to a few games on last night's evidence. Adam?
Yeah, I've not seen the game yet. But looking at the scoreline, I thought the Chargers were going to be fairly comfortable winners in that game.
Yeah.
So that's pretty impressive from the Broncos. And we should mention that maybe Cleveland have found something in DeShone Kizer, who he was consensus number one pick at the end of the college season last year. And, you know, all the nonsense of the combine and whatnot relegates him to the second round. And Cleveland might find themselves in a very handy position next year in the draft, given the number of picks they've got, if Kizer is their man. They'll can probably build an entire team.
Yeah, it also does help with that O-line, is just giving him about 3-5 seconds on every snap.
He was just making really sensible throws as well.
Yeah, I mean, the one interception was the TJ Watt interception.
Yeah.
Thank you, TJ, in fantasy. Was possibly his worst throw. It was underthrown or overthrown. I'm not too sure which way it was. But apart from that, Cleveland, there seemed to be a bit of a buzz around the place as well when they were hanging around for most of the first two and a half, three quarters. So it would be fun to see them get something going with him. And as it could really open, all the picks they're going to have next year could really open it up for them to be aggressive, getting a difference maker elsewhere other than at the quarterback position. But yeah, there was a few surprises, a few shocks, and obviously I think Tony Romo, as Adam said, was a breath of fresh air for CBS.
Hey, this is John Moffitt, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast. Go Hawks!
I'm Sean Wilson, UK chapter president. This is your True or False on the UK Pedestrian Podcast.
Bears receiver Kevin White will never play another snap for the Bears because he's injured again.
So depressing, man. West Virginia, third straight year with a third different injury, I think it is. And this one's his collarbone, or I think he did
fractured shoulder blade.
Yeah, so he did what CJ Prosise did last year. But yeah, that's rough. He was so much fun to watch at West Virginia, and he was my favorite wide receiver in that group. I think I can't remember who else is in that lot, but yeah, it's a bit depressing, really.
Can they just move away from him?
Yeah, I don't think he'll play another snap in Chicago. I think he'll probably find a home somewhere in the NFL, but yeah, I think he's done in Chicago. Adam?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. For my true or false, I'm going to go that by the year end, the Cincinnati Bengals, well, yeah, it's not true or false, actually, it's a three-part answer. The Bengals will be making 0, 1, or 2 changes at cornerback, at quarterback and head coach come the end of the season.
Ooh. Two. Both.
Yeah. Marvin Lewis should have been sacked about 3 years ago. So yeah, true.
Somehow keeps surviving.
I think the only way that Dalton might survive is if they do fire Lewis and the new coach goes, is something like an Adam Gase or what apparently Sean McVay appeared to be against a very bad Colts team on Sunday with Jared Goff. Just a bit of a quarterback whisperer kind of thing. I think that would be something to watch. But if they go for a defensive coach again, I think Dalton may be putting his house on the market in Cincinnati.
How long can you really be bothered as a Bengals fan to root for Andy Dalton?
I thought I would have been out by now, really.
Yeah, it's just a lot of people say that Tom Cable and all the nonsense he's putting us through is wasting prime Legion of the Boom and Russell Wilson. Andy Dalton and their terrible drafts from the Bengals are wasting AJ Green.
He's 30 this year.
Yeah, they just give Vontaze Burfict, who can't go a snap without trying to kill someone and just being absolute bonehead, they just give him $35 million. I mean, what is that? Burfict, when he actually bothers to play football properly, he's not a bad player, but it's
misses four to six games a season being suspended.
Yeah, it's a bizarre. And Josh Gordon has a drink on a plane and can never play again, apparently. But similar to that, I guess, Eli Manning will retire at the end of the season.
Yeah, because, I mean, they look lifeless without Beckham this week. And you can't, if you're going to rely on one guy to make your offense, Eli's just going to hang it up.
Yeah. Adam?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. They might have a swan song year and then he might pack it in. His arm strength just looks so down.
Yeah. I mean, without Odell Beckham suggests that they didn't have anyone at wide receiver. They still have Sterling Shepard, who looked pretty good last year, and Brandon Marshall, who's been pretty good no matter where he's been on the field, if it isn't the case off the field. But yeah, we will be back next week with hopefully discuss the Seahawks win for the first time this season. Obviously, preview week 3 as the Seahawks make the trek to Nashville and to face the Tennessee Titans and Marcus Mariota and Adam's favourite, Derek Henry. But until then, where can they catch all of this, Ross?
You can get us on thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. That's where you can get our podcast from if you don't use iTunes. If you do use iTunes, just go and subscribe and tell everyone else to subscribe using their devices, because subscriptions make us more visible in the charts. We've been stuck around the 80s for a long time now. Go and leave us a rate and review as well on there. You can get us on Patreon, patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast. Thank you to the 12 people that back us. We will be giving you some more content very soon. And on Twitter, @SeahawkersUK.
Cool. Yeah, as I said, we'll be back some point next week with another podcast. But until then, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks Super Bowl 48 champions.
I nearly played us out there with "Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend." But I didn't get it up in time. Not the first time that's happened.
But yeah, moving on. We're going to try again with some locks and shocks. Ross, your lock of the week.
Okay, let me find the schedule. I'm going to start tracking these as well, see how we do each week.
Well, you did terribly last week because you said your lot was the Patriots.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, that killed all my bets as well. Who's playing who this week? Okay, I need to take this schedule in. Well,
right,
just a sign of the research we do on this podcast before recording.